All right, for the sake of the recorded lessons, I'll just mention again that we are beginning again in or continuing in our lessons. We're in lesson number 9 in our series on marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Unfortunately, a topic that needs to be studied when you look at the society we live in and how rampant divorce is and the situations that people get into when they remarry after having been married a first time. And unfortunately, even Christians can find themselves in these situations. Even knowing God's plan or learning God's plan, they find out that they've been involved in marriages that are not quite right in the eyes of God. We spent a good amount of time going over definitions. We've looked at the modern definitions, both of marriage and of divorce. We've looked at specific modern legal definitions and the applications used, at least in South Carolina and other state legislature. We've talked about the fact that there is no United States legislation, no constitutional legislation on marriage, but it is a state-level issue. But we really wanted to look at the Bible definitions. What does the Bible say about marriage, and what does the Bible say about divorce? And to do that, we've studied Old Testament Hebrew meanings and the New Testament Greek meanings. We've also looked at specifically how some of those words were applied by Jesus as he looked at Genesis 2 and Deuteronomy 24, in the New Testament context, when questions had come up. And so we've seen his clarification on those topics in the Gospels. And what we're in the midst of doing right now is taking a look at apostolic teaching. We know in Matthew 28, Jesus said he had been given all authority, and he sent the apostles out to continue teaching the things that he had taught them and to teach the new things that would be revealed through the Holy Spirit. Doing that, last week we looked specifically at this question about married or bound. Because so often the issue that comes up when we're talking with people about marriage, divorce, and remarriage is this issue of who's married and who's bound. And often people believe that a marriage automatically means that you're bound to that person. Well, that's not always the case, and we'll take a look and remember some of that today. But the question really is, are you married to this person or are you bound to this person? Because it is possible to be married to someone but not bound to them by God. And that is really the issue. We began looking at Romans 7 last week. I apologize, this is going to be kind of quick for those who weren't here last week. This is a review, and then we'll get into the more detailed stuff for tonight's lesson. But Romans 7, verses 2 and 3, Paul is putting forth a treatise on the fact that Christians have died to the law, and so therefore they can be married to Christ or to this new covenant. They can make a new covenant. And in doing that, he illustrates how they've died to the law in the same way that a woman whose husband has died is then free to marry another, but it gives us information on how marriage works. So we see the husband and wife, they're bound by law. There's this law, it was written in Genesis chapter 2, that binds them together. It's God's universal law for marriages. What God has joined together, let not man separate. It's supposed to be a marriage that's binding until one of them dies. And so that's the normal situation, if you will. Those people are married and they're bound. They have the relationship of the marriage, and they have the obligation of the binding that God has done. Then we saw another situation. If the husband dies, well, then the wife is released from the law of her husband. Certainly, she cannot continue to be bound to someone. She doesn't have a responsibility to someone who has already died. Therefore, both the relationship, the person's gone, and the obligation have been taken away. She's released from that law. Also a natural situation, or normal situation, if you will. This woman is now unmarried and unbound. But we've seen some other situations that come up. If while her husband lives, she marries another man, here she's bound by law to her husband, but she chooses to marry another man. There's a new relationship that's formed here. It's even called a marriage. The Bible recognizes it as a marriage, although it is not something that will bind them. You'll see that the binding is shown with the two arrows here just for convenience sake, and this is just a relationship. They're not bound by God, and therefore she's called an adulteress. She is involved with this man while she's still bound to this one. That's what adultery is, and we'll look at that detail a little more next week. We're going to get into some of the definitions of what constitutes actual adultery. But in this case, she's married to another man, but she's bound still to her original husband because he's still alive. But if her husband dies, then she's free from that law. So that if she contracts another marriage, she's no adulteress. They are now bound by the law of God. She was free to marry. because the binding and the relationship were both taken off her at the death of the other husband, she could marry someone then. So she's married and bound now to a second husband. I know we went through this all last week, but I think it's important to reestablish this. So what we were looking at in that Romans chapter 7 material was Paul's example of death to the law. And to show the example, to give the illustration, he used a marriage relationship. There's a law, a covenant between the man and the wife, and when one of the parties dies, the other then is free to establish a new covenant with someone else. But then we saw the question that comes up in 1 Corinthians 7, and it's really the same teaching. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. There we have the image again, the marriage relationship and the obligation of the binding. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes. And so we see again the same teaching. She's married and bound to a second husband. We get two instances of that, both in the writings of Paul, where he talks about this possibility. And that was Paul's exhortation to be sober about the choices. Remember in 1 Corinthians 7, he's dealing with a present dilemma, and they have questions about whether it's good to marry, whether they should divorce, whether they should leave their non-Christian partners. And Paul is saying, if you have a virgin that wants to marry, exhort them that this is a decision for life. It's going to complicate their lives in this difficult time. Exhort them that they better make a very informed decision, because there's no getting out of it. Divorce is not an option. That was the exhortation in which he said, death is the only thing that can separate you, and that's the only thing that can free you from the binding. Well, this week we're going to look at some questions and some consequences that come about because of this idea of married and bound. And the first one that we really need to look at is, who can marry? I apologize, that question mark's not very clean up there, but who can marry? Who has a scriptural right? We hear about people that have a scriptural marriage or an unscriptural marriage. Who, according to Scripture, has the right to be married? So there are several situations we can find. First, it's someone who has never been married. If you will, look with me at Matthew chapter 19. We've seen these verses already quite a bit. Again, I'll remind you that there is very little really that's written in the New Testament concerning marriage. There are very few passages. We've already gone through almost all of them in our studies. And almost always they hearken back either to Genesis 2 or Deuteronomy 24. Genesis 2 being God's general law for marriage, and Deuteronomy 24 being a regulation of divorce, not a permission, but a regulation of divorce in the event that it had already happened. But here in Matthew 19, verses 4 and 5, Jesus, as he's talking and responding to the question of the Pharisees, he says, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female?" The Pharisees want to know if they can divorce for just any reason. Jesus' response is, God made them male and female and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. God had intended for marriages to happen. He made male and female with the distinct purpose that they would then get together, that they would join with one another and become one flesh. All of these are ways of describing part of the marital responsibility and relationship. So God had intended marriage to happen. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. Somebody read that for us. Hebrews 13, verse 4.
Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge.
So God intended marriage to happen, and in fact, he says it's an honorable pursuit. It's something that's necessary. In fact, it'll keep you from being in the other side, those who are judged, those who just get together and don't get married. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 7, some verses we didn't look at last week, but they're in the same general context. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9, and then verse 28. Whoever gets there, if you read those two at least, please. How about verses 8 and 9 in 1 Corinthians 7, and then verse 28? Who's got that? Joe, thank you.
But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion.
And then verse 28 also.
Sure. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you.
So we see that marriage is a viable option. It's a natural option, something that God intends. for people to seek out. Even in a difficult situation, Paul said it would be okay. But in this sense, if you can't exercise self-control, then get married. That's God has given an outlet for those who don't have self-control. They need to have self-control within the marriage relationship. If a virgin marries, she has not sinned. All of these things show us clearly that God intended for those who had never been married to be able to marry. So here's how this looks. He who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. So who can marry? Well, one who's never been married. Certainly, we didn't expect that. If you have two people that have never been married, obviously they can be married. There's a male who's never married, a female who's never married. They draw together. The response, or the end of that, is a joining. They're joined. And this, remember, this was the passive that we were looking at. It's God who joins them together. So one who's never been married can be married, and the marriage is honorable. And let them marry, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. There's our first group of people that can be married, one who's never been married. Well, here's the second group, someone whose mate has died. This is what we looked at in a little more detail last week, Romans 7, verses 2 and 3. She's bound by law to her husband as long as he lives. Certainly then, death is indicating that there's an end to that. If her husband dies, she's free from that law. She's no adulteress, though she has married another. Even in this case, if her husband has died, she's no longer, or she is not an adulteress if she contracts a marriage. We'll talk about the other aspect of that probably next week. 1 Corinthians 7, again, the wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. If her husband dies, she's at liberty to be married, and here's the illustration of that. Again, there's the law. Who can marry? One whose mate has died. Here's the case. The husband and wife are bound by the law. That's the way it begins. But the husband dies, so she's at liberty. She's released from the law to be married to whom she wishes. We'll look at that question only in the Lord also next week, Lord willing, when we look at some more of the questions. But if her husband dies, she's at liberty to be married to whom she wishes. So there's two groups we've already seen. One who's never been married, and one whose mate has died. Now we get into some of the issues that are a little more difficult because of situations that people have gotten themselves into. But Matthew 19, verse 9, let's go back there. It's going to help us understand a little bit about this next group of people that can marry. It's people who've put away a mate who was unfaithful, who was involved in sexual immorality. Matthew 19, 9. Somebody read just that verse for us. Who's got that? Jim? Thank you.
And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery.
Very good. So we look at this person here, this whoever. Whoever divorces his wife, and we'll see later that actually goes both ways. A wife can divorce her husband. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another. There's two steps to this. There's the divorce and the remarriage. That's important to remember. If he does both of those, the general result is going to be he commits adultery. If he marries someone else because he divorces first, in general, he commits adultery. However, in Matthew 19, we have this exception clause. Whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality, if that's the reason he divorces her and marries another, then the stakes are changed. If the divorce was for sexual immorality and married to another person, he's accepted, sent out of that initial result. He's no longer in that situation of committing adultery. In fact, the opposite is true. Does not commit adultery. When we looked at Matthew 19 before, we talked about the fact that what Jesus was dealing with here was their question about whether it was lawful. And so he was focusing on the adultery on their behalf. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? No, it's not lawful. It causes adultery. And then he gave this exception. There's only one case. Not just for any reason, which was their question. There's one reason. If sexual immorality is involved, that's the only time it doesn't cause adultery. When we looked at the details, we saw that in fact, if sexual immorality was involved, she was already an adulteress. But the implication is that this person can marry again without being involved in adultery. And we'll look at that even in more detail as we go. Someone who divorces a mate for fornication, who divorces and marries another, who generally commits adultery unless the divorce was for sexual immorality. Again, here's how it looks. There's the basic law of God, what God has joined together, let not man separate, based on Genesis 2:24. But who can marry? Well, the one who divorces for fornication, the one who did the divorcing. You've got the husband and wife that God has joined. In this case, generally, whoever divorces his wife and marries another, you see that has been broken by the one who divorced it. I meant to leave that on there, though, because the binding is still there. That's what this is meant to represent. He's contracted a new relationship, even a new marriage, but the obligation is still here. The obligation is still here, and so therefore commits adultery. That's the general rule. Divorced his wife, married another. That's adultery. However, in the event that the exception case is involved, here's the husband whose wife is involved in sexual immorality. She's found another relationship here. She may even have gone out and married another man. That's sexual immorality. If he puts her away then, for that reason, he contracts a new marriage even. A new relationship in which he's been joined by God to a new woman. This is not adultery. Can you see that? Let's go back through that just to be sure we've got that. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. That's the general rule. But here it is. If first the wife contracts another relationship, she's involved now in sexual immorality, and then he puts her away for that reason. According to Matthew 19, he's not in adultery. And God has joined them is the end result. He's able to contract a new relationship. This is adulterous. That continues to be sexual immorality over here. So who can marry? Well, someone who's never been married. Someone whose mate has died. Someone who divorces a mate for fornication. And last on our list here is someone who's reconciling. And there's information that helps us understand that. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Again, some verses that we didn't look at last time, so let's read here. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 and 11. Whoever's got that first, if you'll go ahead and start reading that for us. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 10 and 11. Bob, you have that for us?
Now to the married I command, yet not I but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And a husband is not to divorce his wife.
So the instruction here, remember this is in 1 Corinthians 7, they're asking about these issues that have come up. And they're obviously curious about, specifically, relationships where a Christian has married a non-Christian. The general command is not to depart. That's God's law from Genesis chapter 2. The Christian certainly never has the right to walk away from a marriage. The wife is not to depart from her husband. The husband's not to divorce his wife. But if it happens, what do? If one of the members walks away, preferably and probably going to be the unbeliever, but if it happens, what do? And he'll talk specifically about that a little later. But here we need to understand what words we're using, because people try to make a case out of this for allowing people to remarry if someone leaves them. What we're looking at here is this word depart. It's not a word that just means she decided to go off on her own. It's the word chorizo or chorizo. I don't know how you say that in the Greek. It's the very word which is used over and again. It's the word specifically used in Matthew 19 to mean divorce. It means to put away. In this case, this person has left, has departed, has divorced the husband. This woman went away from him. We see very clearly in the context that's exactly what it means, because the result of this departing is that she was unmarried. Verse 11 says, let her remain unmarried. She wasn't just separated. She wasn't just out walking about. She was unmarried from this person. She cut herself off. She divorced him. That was the result of this depart. It's a divorce. Now, if she does depart, well, we know that's sinful. The command in verse 10 was,
don't depart. But she did. If she does, then what do? Well, there's two possibilities. Remain unmarried. Now, this is not a sanctioning. This is not a saying, yeah, you can depart if you want, just stay out there unmarried. This is saying if it's already happened. Remember, this is the way it was in Deuteronomy 24. This was not go out and divorce everybody. This was, if it had happened, here's the way you deal with it so that sin doesn't get worse. If she's already left, here's what she can do. The only thing she can do. She can either stay unmarried, otherwise not marry anybody else, or she can come back and marry the one she was married to. She can be reconciled. And that would have to be a remarriage because there she had departed. She had divorced. God's not saying come back and shack up. He's not saying come back and just move in with them. He's saying you come back and you remarry. Now, that's the options. That's what we're looking at. If the one has departed, they can remain alone or reconcile. So who can marry? Well, we've seen several. The wife cannot depart from her husband. If she does, either she remains unmarried, or here's the other marriage, reconciled to her husband. So one who is reconciling can marry. It's actually a remarriage, but they're a candidate for marriage in the right circumstance. So here's the husband and wife. They are not to depart. That's the command. That's verse 10 of 1 Corinthians 7 there. The wife is not to depart from her husband, but if she does, she's gone off somewhere. The marital relationship is not upheld, but the binding is. They are still bound by God, even though she's off somewhere else. She owes her responsibility to the husband. So if she does depart, which is sin, then let her remain unmarried. That's a concession. That is not a command. That is, if it's already happened, then this is the state she's going to be in. She's not going to be seeking other companionship. It's the way it was in Deuteronomy 24. It was conceded that she was already gone. Then you give the regulation so that the man can't, who sent her out can't take her back. Let her remain unmarried or be reconciled. There's the remarriage. God seals the relationship back up and joins them again. So who can marry? Well, didn't have the whole list there. Who can marry? We've got one who's never been married. We've got one who has put away their spouse for fornication. We've got one who is reconciling, and I've already forgotten the other one. Oh, one whose spouse has died. So there's four categories of people that can marry, according to what the Bible would show us. Now, I know I've run through that kind of quickly. I'd like to know their comments or questions you have. The gender issue we've talked about some. The Bible seems to be describing what to do if the woman leaves or if the man kicks the woman out, but it works both ways. It's an obligation that God has bound on the two. That's what the binding represents. Yeah, you're exactly right. We need to understand that responsibility, that obligation comes because God says it's there, not because of anything that we've done legally or any choices we've made. That's why I can put away my wife for any reason, marry somebody else, yet I'm still bound to her. God still sees me under obligation to her, and I'm under obligation to God for her. And so that's why I'm considered in adultery if I'm off with somebody else, even if I've legally married, even if I've legally divorced this one. Now, that's why we need to understand this question, married or bound, so that we can go on and study in detail some of these situations that will come up. So they're excellent questions. Well, we've seen who has a scriptural right to marry. We're not going to get through all of these tonight, but we want to look at a little bit. You'd think it would be easy just to say everybody who's not in that category has not the right to get married scripturally. But who cannot marry? I think we'll look at two tonight, and Lord willing, we'll pick up some others next week and then look at some of these side questions that have come up. But who cannot marry? Who does not have a scriptural right? Who would God not bind together? Well, first, someone who has been put away. Now, that seems like a very sweeping and general statement, and it is, and it's meant to be. Matthew chapter 5, verse 32. Again, we've looked at these verses, but we're going to focus on part of them tonight that we haven't been focusing on so much. Matthew 5, verse 32, and then somebody else will be ready again with Matthew 19, 9. Who's got Matthew 5, 32? Jeff, thank you.
But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery.
All right, and Matthew 19, the second part of verse 9 at least, you've already seen the verse, but the second half of the verse down there, who's got Matthew 19, easily available. Thank you, Joe.
And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery.
We see the same thing in the end of 5:32 and 19:9. Whoever marries her, or the woman who is divorced, commits adultery. Whoever marries a woman who is divorced. Matthew 19:9 says, whoever marries her who is divorced. Luke 16 says the same thing. Whoever marries her is divorced from her husband. And the conclusion in all of those is the same. Commits adultery. Whoever marries that one that has been divorced commits adultery. Well, we need to understand this phrase, put away. It's not used in the New King James like it was used in the Old King James. The Jews said something about allowing her to be put away or to be dismissed is the word they use in the New King James. But that phrase put away is very nice. It's a good phrase for us to look at because it clarifies this other phrase is divorced, which is what we have in the New King James. Whoever marries her who is divorced. In English, when we talk about being divorced, it could describe either person. Are you divorced? Yes. It doesn't say whether you did the divorcing or whether you were the recipient of the divorcing. You're just in the state of being divorced. In this case that we're looking at here, this put away helps because it talks about something passive, something you weren't the one that instigated. You didn't start it. It happened to you. You were divorced from. And so we need to understand that. Again, it's that same word, chorizo. But in this case, the woman did not do the divorcing. She was the one who was acted upon. The divorce was enacted on her, against her. Again, in English, is divorce describes the situation of both, but in the Greek here, this word only describes the one who was put away. They were the divorced, the put away person. And so again, the question is who received the divorce, not who gave it. So we're looking at who cannot marry someone who received a divorce, someone who had been put away. Now, what seems strangest perhaps, and the most difficult thing for people who don't appreciate God's authority to understand is this last bit. There's no consideration of the motive behind the divorce. The sweeping generality is, if you've been divorced, you can't marry. If someone divorced you, doesn't matter what for, you cannot marry. If you're put away for fornication, that's obvious. If you've been out committing sexual immorality and you're put away for that, it's obvious that you cannot marry. No one's going to argue with that. Well, I say no one. It's unfortunate that even some who would call themselves Christians have argued with that. But that's a generality that most are willing to accept. It's the other half that's more difficult. If you're put away for any other reason, doesn't matter if you were guilty, the guilty party, as you'll hear people say, or the innocent party, doesn't matter if you were guilty of fornication, if someone marries you after you've been divorced, that's still adultery. That's still adultery, and that's a shocking thing to hear. Here's what it looks like. Whoever marries her who is divorced, who cannot marry? One who's been put away, one who's been divorced. Why? Well, let's look at the reasons. What were they put away for? Well, we fell out of love. How often do you hear that? We married young, and we just thought it was going to be easy, and it wasn't. We fell out of love, so we just got divorced. You know, it was nobody's fault. Well, here's the one that a lot of people bring up. Well, she burned the dinner every single night. She burnt the bread, whatever. So I just couldn't deal with it. Irreconcilable differences. There's the great one that's on almost all the divorce papers. Irreconcilable differences. We just couldn't get along. Or here's one where people want to really make an exception. Well, the guy went divorced me so he could go marry the one he wanted to be with. So what did I have to do with that? He was in sexual immorality. Well, he divorced you. That's the question. He divorced you. And it says, if you were divorced. And then, of course, if you were involved in sexual immorality. For any other reason whatsoever. If you were the one who was put away, you cannot marry. That's adultery.
Uh-huh. During this study, I want us to look at this, the race to the courthouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we'll talk about mental divorce, and I think that some of that will come in there.
The race to the courthouse.
Yeah, I think it's worth touching on that subject. And there's a lot that's been a lot of pain and a lot of stir in the waters that's come up because of this kind of subject. But what we're looking at is, what does it say? Who divorced whom? It doesn't say what the reason was. It just says, if you're the divorced, then it's adultery if someone marries you. And therefore, you're an adulterer if you marry them. The one who has been put away. Bob, I'll make sure to remember that point, and you remind me if I don't, because I want to make sure we do touch on that. So the someone who has been put away cannot marry. Now the someone who does the putting away in the event that they did it not for fornication is also in the camp of who cannot marry. Matthew 19:9 again. I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. You put them away and you marry another unless it's sexual immorality. Mark 10 and Luke, they just say if you divorce and marry someone else. Mark 10 also has the idea of the woman divorcing her husband and marrying someone else. In general, a putting away, not for fornication. They just talk about the generality. If you put away, then you become an adulterer when you marry someone else. That, again, is the conclusion. Commits adultery. What do we do with that? Well, who cannot marry? Whoever divorces his wife and marries another, or if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, who cannot marry? The one who puts away, not being for the cause of fornication. What was the reason? That's not supposed to be there, but again, doesn't matter. Fell out of love, burned the den, irreconcilable differences. Divorcing to marry another. I'm going to put you away so I can go marry somebody else. Well, obviously, if you're an adulterer, or any other reason, if you're putting them away and they're not in sexual immorality, you're turning into an adulterer. You commit adultery. But there's the exception. Except for sexual immorality. So who cannot marry? Well, the one who has been put away, and the one who puts away not for fornication. We'll look next week, Lord willing, at some other possibilities, and we'll get into some of these issues and questions that have come up. We've got this question of the race to the courthouse that we'll definitely get into. We've got a question about what do you do if the woman's already in adultery, she's married into the relationship, she's in adultery, and then her former husband dies. What do you do with that relationship? That's something we'll have to look at. And what we'll really have to look at to be able to understand all of these issues, Lord willing, next week we'll get into this, is the definition, biblically, what is adultery? We've looked at what is marriage, we looked at what is divorce. What is adultery? What is fornication? What is sexual immorality? What are these things that are the thing on which the divorce hangs? We need to know what those things mean so that we can deal with these divorces, so we can see what situations are and are not legitimate for separating from a spouse, so that we can help people that are in the situation. We're not looking at this, obviously, so we can find a way out of our relationships. We're looking at this as a way to help people who, because of sin, have gotten themselves involved in these conflicts and these issues. And we want to know what has God said so we can help them to know how to get out of it, or what they have to do, what their responsibility is before the Lord.